Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Perfect. Doesn't that word have a good sound to it? It's such a positive, upbeat sound. And to me, it's sort of the more solid adult version of awesome, right? But I think it relates to the fact, both those words really, to the fact that we as people and maybe as a society kind of pursue perfection. We want things to be really good. And I don't know if that's something related to our, you know, puritanical background or whatever it would be, but we tend to strive upward, right? So in this area, for example, we're centered here on the Space Coast, which is necessarily full of engineers that help the space program, the staggering, declining space program run. That was my guest in the background. I'll get around to introducing him in a minute. And But engineers are people who, I think, more than most people, strive toward perfection. They're very logical, rational, organized people. You know, they're mathematical in the way they kind of compartmentalize and think about things. And I know that as a homeowner, when I have tradespeople come to the house to do things, if they say to me after a minute of conversation, "Are you an engineer?" That's usually a cue to me that they don't really intend to do a very good detailed job, because they're picking up from me that I'm organized and maybe demanding. And, you know, so I always tell them, no, I'm not an engineer, but I work with them, which is true. You know, I'm a chemist, which is sort of, you know, in the same ballpark. But I think what they are relating to is past experiences with people who are very organized and very detail-oriented and very demanding. And so I'm sort of along the lines of that, but not to an extreme. But a lot of engineers are that to an extreme, to the point that they're a stereotype. So anyway, to my guest, who is Dr. Michael Hyde. He's a professor of communication ethics at Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and he's an expert on this concept of perfection. He may be perfect himself. I'm not sure. We'll talk to him and try to find that out, but he's laughing in a way that implies he knows he's not, and like me, your wife may tell you often that you're not perfect. So he's written a book called
Many Others.
Yeah, that's right. So, well, we all get that, especially those of us who think we're pretty good, if not perfect. But Dr. Hyde has written, can I call you Michael?
Please, sir.
That's good. Michael has written a book called Perfection, Coming to Terms with Being Human. And that's what we're going to talk about. It's kind of an odd subject, but I think there's a lot to it in terms of our daily behavior and our long-term life behavior, if you want to call it that. So, Michael, why don't you plunge in by just describing for us the premise of your book, Perfection?
It's a book where I'm looking and critically assessing how it is that we as human beings embody this desire. We have this innate desire for perfection, which I mean that we are constantly are trying to achieve a state of completeness in our lives, whereby, you know, at least for a moment, we feel secure, comfortable, and at home with ourselves, others, and our immediate surroundings. We're creatures that like to have it, as they say, all together. And that's this perfectionist metaphysical impulse, to have something all together, to be complete in what we're doing. That was something that showed itself in other research that I had been doing over the years, so I wanted to explore that more clearly, and especially coming from communication. But we can see evidence in that and how we go about using language, because this perfectionist impulse makes up the very fabric of language that allows us to think and talk about whatever this passion or anything else may truly be. So, you know, you can think about it this way, that, you know, the mere desire to name something by its proper name or to speak a language in its distinctive ways is intrinsically perfectionist. I mean, what's more perfectionist in essence than the impulse, when one is in dire need of something, to so state this need that one in effect defines the situation? I mean, our language, we use our language to try to tell ourselves and others what is the case. And when you're talking about what is the case, or what something is, what their actual existence is, you're talking about perfection.
Well, for sure, writers seek perfection in expressing themselves in their writing, and to a much greater extent, I think, than most people do. They're concerned with finding what Hemingway used to call le mot juste, right? In French, the right word, the proper word. And there was another poet named T.S. Eliot who who actually wrote Cats, which is what he's best known for in the popular literature. But he talked about the interminable wrestle with words and meanings. And,
yes.
You know, so writers really, you know, that's their stock and trade, and they wrangle with that stuff, and it drives them neurotic, and if they're not neurotic to begin with. But I think most people try to express themselves clearly, and to the extent they can, they go farther in life, right? I mean, those who can communicate their needs and their expectations and the concepts in their heads better and more clearly.
Well,
go ahead.
I mean, there's a lot of work that's been done in areas of various areas of research that suggest that people who have the ability through training or it just is there, they're fortunate to have it, who are good in coming to terms with things, who are articulate and who can phrase various ideas in a way that moves people, that does not hurt a person's chance for success. It is interesting, however, in writing about Obama, I mean, here we have a most eloquent man who, in fact, even his speech on race, which was called a more perfect union.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a man who really had to use language to try to get to ideas that are not always easily decipherable, and yet he's attacked for that very eloquence. So we live in a strange country at times. Perfection can mean one thing for one person, something for another. But the key here is to try to define it, see what it means. Science will do it one way, religion another.
Well, you know, thinking about that, I wonder, are humans the only species on this planet anyway that strive toward perfection and that think in terms of really higher concepts of, you know, and we're going to get, I think, into how this plays into religion and
yes,
really the big concepts that drive history, right? But, I mean, we're basically elaborated, highly evolved monkeys. I think most people out there in the listening audience have accepted Darwin and
yes,
would go along with that idea. But I don't know that monkeys think conceptually in terms of perfecting their world. Maybe they do, and we just don't know it because we're not smart enough to recognize
right,
it or something. But,
right,
but I mean, does it seem to you that humans are inherently wired to seek perfection to the exclusion of all other species on this planet?
I don't know to the exclusion. I mean, I'm surely not an expert in that. I do know that we have some interesting neuroscience research that suggests that when somebody is thinking metaphysically, that is, they're thinking beyond their everyday being and thinking of worlds of perfection, for example, like God, that our brain is wired. That shows up in the studies, points in the brain actually showing themselves to be active. So we have some sense that we're, quote, wired to think in these terms. Is that a product of evolution? Is that a product of God? Was that all designed? I mean, these are the kind of questions that I raise in the book. I'm not making an argument on one side or the other. What I'm trying to do is to get this notion of perfection, to have people think about it where they just don't take it for granted, because it has a lot of benefits and it has many burdens. As a teacher, and I use this as an illustration with my students, both on the undergraduate and graduate level, Valentine's Day is coming up. And so people will be going out and spending a fortune on cards. And if you've ever been there, I mean, have you ever gone through the experience of, gee, I got to find the perfect card?
Oh, yeah, it's agonizing.
That's a phrase,
yeah.
Perfect card.
Right.
Well, what in heaven's name does that mean? Well, typically what it means is you have found a card that looks and speaks with its language in a way that is very appropriate and conducive to the relationship you have with the person.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? It's their words. Now, my response to my students is, look, if you really care about the person, why are you buying the card? Why don't you just try to do it in your own words?
It's part of our culture.
And that hits them hard.
Yeah.
It hits them hard. Why do you have to go buy a card? And in buying the card, and in fact, it gets so crazy, Court, that in this day and age, if you know, think about it. Sit down. You're going to sit down with somebody that you really love. You want to give them a Valentine's Day card. And instead of giving them a call, you sit them down and say, look, I want to talk to you about how much I love you. In this day and age, we could hear the person say, what, you didn't get me a card?
or what do you want?
That is kind of strange. So
yeah,
being perfect with Valentine's Day is not being perfect with your language or trying to be perfect by letting somebody else do it. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I know it. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Michael Hyde, who's a professor of communication ethics at Wake Forest University, about the concept of perfection. And he's written a book called Perfection, Coming to Terms with Being Human, which I think is just being released this week or sometime here in mid-February.
Correct. just came out this week.
Okay, good. So what I think, you know, being, again, somebody who thinks in sort of engineering organized terms, I'd like to sort of break this down a little bit to a taxonomy maybe of talking about perfection on a personal level, and then later, assuming we have some time, on a cultural level, how perfection kind of comes in to play on a broader stage beyond the, us as individuals. So I think on a personal level, we can talk about it, how the search for perfection can be too much of a good thing is a bad thing, right? So, so I mean,
that's a good way to put it,
And so let's talk about it. Let's break it down even further to sort of the mental or psychological aspects of it, and then maybe the spiritual aspects of it, and then the physical aspects of it. So those three things on a personal level. So let's talk about how it's good and bad on a psychological level. I think we've talked about some of the good things maybe.
Well, sure. I mean, on a, if it is the case that we are, again, to use the technological term, that we are wired to be creatures who are always trying to get things right, who are always trying, who want to try to do things better, who are struggling to improve the world, improve, better, getting things right. All of those are terms that give pretty strong indications that we're creatures that, if we're not going to reach perfection, we still have perfectibility on our minds. One would say, thank goodness.
There's even the idea of trying.
Going back to your engineer example, it seems to me, I want a really, really, really good engineer to build, you know, my house or my lab. I want them to be as exact as possible. I want them to be as complete as possible. I want them to be as perfect as possible.
Sure.
The problem is that sometimes with perfection, and this is not rocket science, and I'm taking this from the social critic Kenneth Burke, who's had a big influence on my life. Sometimes we become so taken with what we think is right that we become, and here's the phrase, rotten with perfection. Rotten with perfection. It's an oxymoron. But to give you examples of that that have translated from the psychological to the social and existential and in horrible ways. And a classic example of being rotten with perfection in the 20th century is Hitler. That is, you have somebody who has a language, constructs a world, is very close-minded, and if you don't fit in, you're dead.
And he wanted to build the perfect Aryan.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the master race. Or they will use language in ways that make you think that you're free, but you're not free, because being rotten with perfection, you want to be under control. So, the three horrible words at the death camps, Arbeit macht frei.
Right.
You know, work makes free.
Yeah.
That was nothing but the manipulation that can come about when you want to say to yourself, I'm going to have complete control over this. We see this a lot with parents and children. You see it in the teaching environment all the time.
Well, I mean, for sure, people want to have the perfect family, or, you know, someone wants to find the perfect mate. I think of eHarmony, where you, you know, take a battery of psychological tests and try to narrow down a million people to that one perfect person out there, you know. So, and so that can be an obsession. And let's use that word then to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder, which I think is the extreme version in your book of being rotten with perfection, huh?
Yeah, well, it is that, and this is one of the reasons why I tell my students when they ask me, you've written this book on perfection, and it follows, it's the third part of a trilogy, actually, and they'll say, you know, can you do all the stuff that you say in this book? And my answer is, of course not. I mean, I've written a book that every time I look at it tells me how imperfect I am. That doesn't mean that human beings cannot come up with ideas about how to improve their lives or to understand how notions of perfection can hurt somebody, hurt you personally on a psychological level. I mean, one of the classic cases for that is, you know, anorexia or bulimia.
That's right, yeah.
And unfortunately in this country, it's more young women than men, but men can have it too, and that is, when you talk with these people, and I talk to a number of students who have this problem, their main concern is control.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to control this? And they'll do anything they can to control it. There's the rottenness with perfection. And the amazing thing about these very unfortunate diseases is that you can be so rotten perfection that you'll kill yourself.
That's right.
And I don't mean with a gun. I mean you will starve yourself to death.
That's right, in a rich country. So, you know, but that ties into the physical part. Remember I said I wanted to talk about it as psychological and spiritual and physical.
Right.
So the physical part is the obsessive pursuit of beauty and youth in our society, right? So that I think that anorexia and bulimia come from young girls who think because they weigh 101 rather than 100 or whatever it is that they're too fat.
Right.
And so they get into an obsessive cycle of either binge purging, throwing up, or not eating at all in order to pursue some idea of physical perfection that in the end is so extreme they look like they came from Auschwitz, you know?
No, right. And it's a big topic area. Here are young men and women, again, specifically women, who will do things to their body that even when you say to them, look, you're getting too thin, they will deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it becomes that obsessive, all right? It becomes that obsessive and compulsive. But it's just not them who suffer the consequences. It's friends, it's families. You know, it spreads. And that, I mean, that can be a difficult problem. I'm very open in the book and in my other writings. I am somebody who has OCD, clinically diagnosed, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Oh, is that right?
It's like I say it's a mild case. And it certainly played a role in my years of writing and eventually getting to this book.
Mm.
Okay? But you have it, and there's all kind of ways to deal with it. Thank God for medicine. I mean, that helps. But a lot of what goes on, I can trace some of this back to just the conditioning that I had as an athlete, to the conditioning that I had by my parents.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's just not all genetic. It's just not all chemical. There are social influences, and you just named them. What the advertising industry does to young people in this country, we have the data. We know what's going on. We just don't seem to do anything about it.
Well, I mean, you know, obsessive compulsive, I think that it's on a spectrum like most things in life are, and up to a certain point, it's probably true of most people in our listening audience that to some extent,
yes,
it's an expression of intelligence that you're a little bit compulsive.
No.
No, I mean, no, but you know what I mean. And so, I mean, like,
absolutely.
The cover of your...
I mean, in the book, I that was something I remember writing, that the very point that you make, and that is, you know, to people, there's this, we're talking about this disease being rotten with perfection, but
yeah,
there's another disease that I name in the book called being rotten with imperfection.
Oh, really?
And my example comes from the Seinfeld comedy series. There's this one episode where George... a character that I never really liked. I don't know who liked George, but
yeah,
he was complaining about how bad his life was and nothing ever worked out for him, you know, and he just was miserable. And what was he going to do? He said, you know, I was born into a family of failures. My grandfather was a failure. My father was a failure. I was born to give up, which is one of my favorite lines.
I was born imperfect.
Well, I know people who would like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they taking on responsibility is such a chore that they won't assume that ethical task. So, I mean, that, for me, can really be a problem, being rotten. I don't want to go the other way. I don't want engineers to be rotten with imperfection.
No.
I don't want surgeons to be rotten with imperfection. I don't want our politicians, although this is a dream, I don't want our politicians to be rotten with imperfection.
No, that's for sure. But
holy mackerel.
But it's funny that the cover of your book, when you take a glance at it, a little more than just a quick glance, the word perfection is in a very ornate gold picture frame on your book. But the frame is slightly askew. And I think that's a good emblem of this thing of obsessive compulsive disorder, where it's actually natural to want to straighten things up to some extent. But if you take it to an extreme, it's unnatural or it's unhealthy. I mean,
and what's interesting, I mean, the cover of the book goes everything to Baylor University Press.
Hmm.
I mean, they were, to my great advantage, they enjoyed the book and spent a lot of time thinking about a cover that would get the point across. But indeed, the human being is more the crooked frame than it is the word perfection. We're typically struggling to try to get to that point.
Yeah.
And another example of the idea of being rotten with perfection, that disease, I mean, we have the evidence now, and it's very sad. There's no doubt about it. But the fact is, we were absolutely rotten with perfection in going up and invading Iraq.
Well, I was going to get to that. And, you know, it's really, I think, you know, again, keeping it on the personal level here, rather than, we're going to get to the cultural level in a minute if we
sure
can. But I mentioned earlier, let's talk about the way this relates to religion. And in particular, I think what you're getting at there is religious fundamentalism, which in the Islamic sense turns out in some cases at the most fundamentalist end of the spectrum to result in terrorist attacks, right?
Right.
And intolerance in general, and religious intolerance and cults,
well,
those things,
you know,
like Jonestown and what was it, Heaven's Gate, the people who took whatever cyanide or whatever it was because they were pursuing some comet. I mean, to an extreme, religion is the pursuit of spiritual perfection, and monks do that, and people who live in cloisters may do that. So what do you say in your book about that connection between perfection and religion?
Yes. Well, because it the book is an intellectual history, and it deals specifically with the issue of communication, and that is how we use language to construct these worlds of meaning that we think are perfect but sometimes do us in. I have a number of things to say about religion, because what term comes to mind as being the most perfect thing there is but God?
Yeah.
I mean, God is a God term.
That's right.
This is one of the powerful things about God, at least in the Judeo-Christian tradition, is that when you have nobody else in the world to turn to, nobody likes you at all, you're getting no acknowledgement, you are promised in the Old and New Testament that by believing, you will be acknowledged. I mean, what would your life be like if nobody acknowledged your existence? Human beings can't do that. They can't survive.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So in religion, we have this powerful outlet that we call God that says, I will always be there for you. Where art thou? Here I am. If I take away that dialectical interaction, there is no Old and New Testament. That's the first question. Where art thou to Adam? And then throughout the Old Testament, and the question is implied throughout the teachings of Christ. So this idea of acknowledgement that human beings need can be tied very much into religion. All right? And that's how we feel perfect when you pray. Interestingly enough, oftentimes when we pray, we're asking for things as opposed to saying, I'm here for you, God, if you believe in God.
That's true.
And we don't even realize that we're being imperfect in that kind of prayer, but we've been taught that it will be answered. Well, sometimes God answers and says no. You know, there's the answer, but it's not always what we want. With what went on, for example, in 9/11, you have a classic example of people in a plane who are rotten with perfection and come hell or high water are going to do anything they can to make that clear.
Yeah, and I guess if you turn to the idea of cults, I mean, that's a kind of a distortion of religion in which the cult leader becomes the sort of the representative of God. And so you get somebody like the Branch Davidians, David Koresh out there, and you get maybe people who are confused or lost or weak-willed or whatever. I mean, even if it's Charlie Manson in the desert with his girls and, you know, these people who are sort of runaway kids almost, and they're seeking order, but they're also looking up to that person as being the perfect exemplar of what they should be or what the spiritual life would be. And that person then often in those cases just uses them and manipulates them mercilessly.
Yeah. But no, I think your point is that at the idea of an exemplar of perfection, we, as I try to explain the book by going to science and religion, I mean, look at the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, walk before me and be thou perfect. All right, that's in the scripture. And in the New Testament, before Christ is being crucified, he tells his followers, I think this is in John, I'm forgetting the exact passage, but he tells his followers, you know, those who believe in me will do the good that I'm doing, and those who believe in me will even do, quote, greater works, for I go unto the Father. Greater works? What does that mean? What are greater works than what Christ supposedly did? And I live in an area that's very evangelical, and I talk to a number of my evangelical friends, and that question oftentimes just stops them in their path. What do they mean by greater works? In both cases, though, in the Old and New Testament, we have notions of perfection that are at work and that are just crucial. With the idea of fundamentalism, radical fundamentalism, as we see in the Islamic country, or as we see sometimes in this country, you have perfection going to a point where, the disease of being rotten is right there. I mean, in Iraq, we lied. With 20/20 vision, we know that things were made up to do anything to keep that world, that notion of perfection and what we were supposed to be doing with democracy. to keep that world intact, and it was a lie. Well, my God, if that's not rotten with perfection, I don't know what is.
Michael, we've talked for almost half an hour now about just the personal level of perfection, and it's fascinating. And as always, I wish we had another half hour, and maybe at sometime in a more perfect future, we may have an extra half hour. But I mean, I'd love to be able to talk about perfection on a cultural level, you know, I mean, and the political level. I mean, we talk about the more perfect union, right, that this country is founded on. But I mean, you know, let's look at the high divorce rate, for example. I mean, if that's not a search for perfection, because the perfect person you thought you'd married turned out to be something different than you thought, and you stopped getting along, you stopped having perfect sex, and whatever it is, you know,
and
you know, so you're always looking like the cow. Maybe the cow does look for a more perfect pasture with better grass on the other side.
I'm a baby boomer, so yeah. My father's coming back from the war, and then I emerge, so I'm growing up in the 50s and 60s, and there was a saying that my parents always tell me. They say, you know, you'll find the right woman, and it will be a marriage made in heaven.
That's right, your soulmate.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And being of Jewish blood, I mean, it was put in a certain way. This is going to happen. Mm. Well, as far as I know, I've been married for 35 years, and I've been blessed. Yeah. But looking for marriages are made here on earth.
Sure.
The idea of perfection, our marriage lasts for a while, and I hope it lasts for another 100 years, because there's a lot of talk, there's a lot of exchange, there's a lot of not buying Hallmark cards, but just sitting down and talking to the other. Even if you sound like a fool, at least you're trying. With my students today, I mean, I look at them and I say, look, for those of you who get married, you have 5 out of 10 marriages will end in divorce.
Yeah, roughly half, yeah.
All right? Before you can even get past your 10th or 15th year, what does that say? Well, I mean, I'm not sure. There's experts that, I guess, could say more about that, but I think, you hit the nail on the head, and that is to say, we have this notion of perfection, right? What I say to my students is, you know, what is perfection? If somebody's just going to fall in love with your looks, sooner or later, you get up in the morning, you're not going to look like that.
That's right.
You're not going to smell like you did. I mean, perfection, as the saying goes, should be much more than skin deep. What I sometimes am afraid of is that we're becoming too impatient in our culture. And if you don't get something right away, then there seems to be something wrong. The idea of commitment has changed. That, in my estimation, that's part of the problem.
Well, we are all just about out of time, Michael. And, you know, I think you're right. We do focus more and more on the superficial, and that comes into play in our general materialism of our culture and the conspicuous consumption and, you know, the fact that so many people have houses they really obviously couldn't afford and now are underwater with or going into foreclosure. I mean, all of those things really are functions of this drive for perfection that you talk about. So I recommend your book, which just came out, called Perfection, Coming to Terms with Being Human. The author is Michael Hyde, Hyde. I want to thank you so much for being on with us, Michael.
I thank you for taking the time to let me be with you.
And I wish, as I said before, that we had another half hour, because we could certainly fill it talking about different aspects of this perfection and how it drives us and drives our culture. But anyway, we are out of time, and I want to thank all of you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.